Day three of BBC Gardeners World Live here at the NEC. Little trickles of rain outside have driven people indoors looking out of the windows of the studio. There are lots of very, very happy people. Somebody else who is very happy joining me in this studio because she's won the best show garden is Frances Tophill. Frances, thank you for coming in to see us and congratulations.
Thank you very much. I'm still recovering from the shock, honestly. I was not expecting that. We weren't even going to be judged until the last minute. So suddenly they said, can we judge you? And I said, yeah, okay. And then I went in thinking they'll give me a silver because there's weeds and there's mess and it's a bit rough around the edges. And yeah, to get platinum and best in show, I'm overwhelmed actually with the support from everybody. It's been so lovely. It is very much my garden. It is exactly the garden I would build if I could, if I had the space. It's sustainable. That's the key message. Everything in there is reclaimed. Even the gravel on the ground is old bricks smashed up. All the plants have been grown peat-free and everything has been sourced from as near to us as we possibly can. It's full of edibles. It's full of pollinator-friendly planting. It's full of loads of different habitats. There's insect habitat. There's ponds. And also it's going on to have a life after this show at a food bank charity. So all the edibles are going to be eaten for hopefully many years to come.
Well, give us some more detail. What exactly have you got in there? I mean, apart from you've used some Belfast sinks brilliantly in there, haven't you? I think I said to you before that the cost of reclaimed and second-hand Belfast sinks has just gone through the roof. But what are the plants? I know some of them came from Hillier, didn't they?
Yes.
But what's in there?
Yeah, so Hillier's provided all of the trees and lots of the herbaceous perennials as well. All the trees and the hedges around the outside are all native, which is really important to me. I've worked on tree conservation charities as my normal day job, doing gardening and conservation work. So it's really important to have native trees because they're so beneficial to our native species of bird and insect. But then all the rest of the planting is a mishmash, really, of lots of different things. Lots of pollinator-friendly plants, so open flowers, accessible nectar. But then a lot as well of edibles and also medicinals. I have, over the years, become more and more interested in the ways in which we've always used plants and maybe have forgotten about how we've done it. So I've got lots of native herbs like mugwort, which is an artemisia that you see growing on road verges all up and down the motorways, actually. That's a really lovely, delicious herb, but really, really nice for having in tea. And it's ever so slightly trippy without being illegal.
You heard it here first. That's pretty. And a lot of your garden is upcycled and recycled materials. And I know you took inspiration from the waterways and things around the area, didn't you?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. You know, Birmingham has such an industrial heritage. And I kind of love that post-apocalyptic look. You know, I haven't been shouting about that, but really that's what I was going for, you know. So it's post-industrial. The idea is a part of, it goes along with the centenary of the BBC, actually, looking back 100 years to the 1920s architectural kind of industry, Bauhaus, and that really brutalist kind of architecture that was around then, and thinking, well, maybe if over the last 100 years we hadn't been focused on technology and we hadn't been focused on progress, but we had been focused on something else, greenery and sustainable living, and what if we did that now? What if we reclaimed that industrial heritage and turned it into something else? Because our cities, you know, are full of people that have no gardens. Why don't we build those gardens in our cities and make them spaces that are welcoming to wildlife, welcoming to people, really useful to people? They can get their medicines there, they can get their food there, you know. If we needed to, that's how we could harness these spaces and turn them into spaces that will serve us and serve the environment. That's the idea.
The other thing I found interesting as well was the recycled materials you used to create the shed.
Yes.
Which you beg, stole, or borrowed, whichever.
Yes. Pretty much everything in that garden is beg, stolen, and borrowed.
But it was a great example for people who, you know, perhaps don't have the money to go and buy a new shed. They don't, you know, perhaps have the funds to make a perfect garden like they see in some of the glossy magazines, yet can have a space that they can enjoy and is serviceable. And that must have been part of your thing.
Totally. I mean, I'm one of those people. I don't have my own garden. I'm staying with friends at the moment, you know, and they let me garden there, but I have my allotment, which I pay £10 a year for. Like many people, you know, there's a lot of us out there that don't have huge spaces. And I really wanted to fill this garden with little ideas that people can take home and put onto any scale, you know. So there's the bit of green roof on the shed, there's the butler sinks, as you mentioned, there's a greenhouse that's made out of old windows, but you could do that on a much smaller scale. So it's really filled with ideas for that type of thing, and for me that's really important.
Again, talking about your garden, because everybody is, to be quite frank, Francis, everybody else, have you seen only at Francis' garden? It always fascinates me when I talk to professionals like you, people who know what you're doing, to make something look so natural takes an awful lot of effort. It's slightly counterintuitive, isn't it? You know, it's like Alice Froggatt's garden a couple of years ago was supposed to be a meadow, yet she thought about where every single blade of grass went in it. And how much more difficult is it to plan something to not look like you've planned it?
It is difficult, and it takes a lot of constant reassessing when you're doing it. When we were building this garden, and I had a huge team helping me, which I have to thank, you know, Rupert Keys, Ruth Gwynn, were amazing helps, and they brought in all their friends and volunteers, and I had my friends volunteering too. But all the while, people were starting to creep back into that show garden look, cramming it full of flowers, and I had to keep stepping in and saying, no, take that away, and like, let's make it a bit more rough around the edges. It takes a lot of effort to create something like that, but also what I would say in this garden is it takes a lot of flexibility in noticing when a happy accident has happened. So with the butler sinks that you mentioned, in the design, they were all supposed to be on a level. When we placed them out to get the placement of them and realised they were different heights and it looked so much better, we went with that. There's the apple that's dropped all of its fruits, and everyone keeps saying, oh, it's so lovely that you thought to put a June drop in. It's like, well, no, I didn't. We planted the apple tree and then it did a June drop, and we just gathered up all the apples and then re-scattered them at the end of the process. So, yes, it takes a lot of planning to get it, but it also takes changing your plan, which is something that people find very tricky to do a lot of the time.
You've got to be flexible, haven't you? Your grand plan could go out of the window. You clearly put your heart and soul into that garden. In another couple of days, it won't exist,
yes,
apart from on the television programmes and in the magazines and in the photographs. Which means it's a legacy for you, something that you've done, which will, you know, and a smile on your face says that you're still coming to terms with what you've achieved, haven't you? What next? How do you top that?
Well, part of me feels quite sad that this garden won't exist in the guise it's in. As I said, all the plants are going to a food bank. If they want the structures, they can have that too. They're coming on Monday to work out if they want a shed that's two stories high.
two-story shed is just genius. I loved it.
So in a way, there will be a living legacy of this garden. It will be going on to feed people who, as you were saying, people are struggling, you know, and that's really important to me, that there is a life beyond this garden that's practical and has a purpose. But for me, what's next is, I don't know. But people keep asking me, will I do another one? And it hadn't occurred to me to do another one. And actually, I feel like, you know, I'm not normally a designer. I'm normally a gardener. I'm normally working in conservation and growing vegetables. And I feel I've achieved something a lot. I have put myself into this garden, and I put myself out there, and it was quite exposing in a way that I hadn't predicted, you know, and especially when I saw these other gardens going up around and how weird mine was in comparison, quite frankly. I was like, oh no, I've done it again, haven't I? But I've loved doing it, and I would never say never, but I think what's next, how do I top it, is I go and I start doing something like that on a more permanent scale. My dream is to create my own community garden where I can do something like this, but it won't be pulled apart after a few days. It can really give back to a community. I've always worked in community gardening anyway, so to have my own space like that has a bit of a lasting legacy would be, oh well, it would be the dream. Let's see. Maybe give it 10 years, but I'd love it.
I think after what you've achieved here at the show this year, your diary, your appointments are going to be full. So pleased for you. A fantastic achievement, a brilliant garden. It's been admired by everybody here at the show. When are you going to stop celebrating? When are you going to put that one in a box and say, right, time to move on?
No, I haven't started celebrating
yet.
I've had a beer every evening and had an ever such a slight headache every morning, but I have to be professional here. You know, I'm here at 9 o'clock every day and I'm giving talks all day
long.
You're
on the telly.
Exactly. Exactly. I have to smile at people and not tell them I've got a banging head. So next weekend, because my normal job I'm working is a head gardener, so tomorrow we start breaking down the garden, then I drive up to Leeds to do a garden makeover with Alan Titchmarsh for a couple of days, then I'll go back down to Devon and do 3 days in my normal job, and then next weekend I'm going for a picnic with my friends and we are jumping in the River Dart. And we are having a big old celebration then,
you won't
next
see that,
weekend.
You won't see that on Gardeners Worldwide, will you? It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming in to talk to us, and congratulations once again.
Thank you so much.